Chapter 2. Knights from a Dark Age. The year is 1095, 4 years prior to the massacre in Jerusalem. Western Europe is in its darkest age. Life is miserable for the common man who slaves away on the land in service of the lords. He is condemned to living in smelly rags, his hair long and matted, filled with lice, his face scarred by pox, and his body covered with grime. Home is a one-room hovel constructed of wood or sod with earthen floors, no windows, and a simple hole in the roof for smoke to pass. Food is moldy bread, and on occasion, rancid pork from a garbage-eating pig that might roam the streets. Life, death, and all bodily functions are open for all to see. Not many survive birth to experience life, and fewer survive life to die of old age. Europe lived by a feudal system where the lowest class of citizen was the common man tied to the land. Above the commoner were the barons or lords that owned the land, the source of all wealth. The most powerful lord of all was the king. An intricate system of loyalty between lords and kings maintained the balance of power in the land. But even with a ruling king, law and order was not centralized. It was up to the lords to protect their land against other lords and wandering barbarians. To fill this need, lords and barons employed a warrior class known as the knights to fight in their armies, guard their castles, act as messengers or ambassadors, and serve on councils. They were trained from an early age to wield the sword, lance, and shield, and to ride on horseback wearing heavy armor wrought from iron. The knight was under his lord's protection, both legally and militarily. Whenever there was a battle, and frequently lords were at war with each other, he would combine with other knights to form a formidable fighting force. During the Dark Ages, violence was the norm. Lords fought each other for land and wealth incessantly, while barbarians, brigands, and thieves were a constant threat. The smell of death was everywhere. Needless to say, this part of the world could be a violent and miserable place to live. In medieval society, the people looked to the church for their own personal salvation. God and paradise could only be reached through the church's representatives. To be excommunicated from the church was considered the worst possible disaster for the individual, for it supposedly condemned them to hell on earth and in the hereafter. This made the institution of the church more powerful than any king, and also very rich. On top of the various taxes and fees it imposed on the people, it also offered indulgences. An indulgence was a partial or full exemption from some or all of the hard time awaiting Christians in the next life because they have sinned. Indulgences were offered by the church in exchange for donations, but also for other acts of service to the church. Towards the end of the 11th century, the church was in a state of crisis. The institution had split into two over the issue of marriage within the clergy. The gulf between the western half and the orthodox eastern half was widening. Further, the right to appoint the pope became an issue of contention between the church and the state. In fact, the situation was so grave that at one time there were three different popes. At the same time, the ongoing war between Muslims and Christians in Spain and North Africa had taken a turn for the better. News of a number of Christian victories was filtering in. The ruler of the Byzantine Empire and the protector of the Eastern Church sent a message seeking help after a series of defeats to the Muslim Seljuk Turks. An opportunity presented itself. Pope Urban decided that it was time to pursue the Muslim Saracens in their own homeland. He would demonize the Muslims with untruths, and he would call upon the Christians to rid the infidels from the Holy Lands. In Clermont, France, 1095, he addressed thousands of noblemen, knights, and commoners, calling upon them to take arms against the demonic Saracen foe.
From the confines of Jerusalem and the city of Constantinople, a horrible tale has gone forth, and very frequently has been brought to our ears, namely, that a race from the kingdom of the Persians, an accursed race, has invaded the lands of those Christians, and has depopulated them by the sword, pillage, and fire. When they wish to torture people by a base death, they perforate their navels and drag...
What shall I say of the abominable rape of the women? To speak of it is worse than to be silent. Oh, what a disgrace if such a despised and base race, which worships demons, should conquer a people which has the faith of omnipotent God and is made glorious with the name of Christ.
The incentives were great for the Crusaders. They would be given full indulgences. The riches of the East would be at their feet, and a chance to escape the wretched conditions they lived in to the land of milk and honey. The message was relayed to every village in Europe. Princes, lords, knights, priests, peasants, women and children responded in droves. Their aim was to annihilate Muslim existence in the East. Wearing the Crusader cross and shouting, "God wills it," they marched toward Jerusalem, blinded by their newfound religious zeal.